Hi, and welcome to this Learn Live special event. We are super excited to be joining you here today for securing your data with Azure SQL. I'm Anna Hoffman, a data and applied scientist on the Azure SQL team, and I'm joined by Bob Ward. Bob, thanks for joining us today. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Anna, thank you. Thanks everyone for joining us today as part of Microsoft Ignite and Learn Live. Yeah, it's great to be back with you again. I'm a principal architect in the Azure data team focusing on SQL Server and Azure SQL. And Anna, once again, we're back talking Azure SQL.
We are back. And today we're going to be talking about a very specific module in Microsoft Learn called Secure Your Data with Azure SQL. Now, if you want to follow along, you can go to this URL or you can follow along later. It will be around before, later, during. So this is a great resource to you. And one thing I also wanted to call out is that this is not just a single module standalone. Along with this module, we actually have a whole learning path. Bob, can you tell viewers a little bit about like what everything is in this learning path we developed?
I know it's amazing. It's kind of a teaser for everybody. We're talking security today, but it is part of a broader learning path that we partner with Microsoft Learn called Azure SQL Fundamentals. Hey, if you're out there right now and you're a SQL person, you're like, how do I learn Azure SQL? This is gonna be what you're gonna go to. Guess what? You get a free sandbox with us. You can try even the labs, even things that some of the things we're gonna show you today, you can try for yourself. And this encompasses everything about Azure SQL, learning about it, how to deploy and configure it, and are those meat and potatoes, security, performance, and availability, and then putting it all together. And so I'm really excited to talk about security today because that's one of the aspects of the heart of SQL and Azure SQL is security.
Yeah, definitely. We are super excited. And we want to let you know that we are looking at your messages that you're sending us through. We have moderators standing by, Azure SQL subject matter experts to answer your questions in the chat. And some of your questions we'll even be answering live, such as Jason K commented Azure SQL rules, and we definitely agree. So just remember that this is an interactive session. So please make sure to comment, even just say hi or tell us what's going on or what you think about what we're doing so that we can engage with you. We also have several knowledge checks, which will surface in the form of polls. So we'll be quizzing your attention paying capabilities throughout the session. So be sure to pay attention and engage with us and answer those questions. Now, without further ado, we're going to get right into it. We're going to be talking about security today. So that's going to include things like network security, identity and access, data protection, monitoring, logging, and auditing, and then we'll wrap it all up with a nice bow and send you with lots of resources to go learn and get hands-on yourself. Now, in the workshop and in all of the meat and potatoes, like Bob mentioned, security, performance, and availability, we like to separate out each module into the capabilities and the tasks. So we're going to talk about the capabilities, things like Azure Active Directory authentication, things like RBAC, data encryption, Azure Defender, and things like advanced threat protection. And then we're also going to talk about the tasks. So not only the capabilities, but what does it mean for you? What do you need to do as far as configuring and setting up things like network security and monitoring and managing your security? Now, Bob, when we look at Azure SQL security, there are a lot of things. You know, what kind of stands out to you as we kind of give a glance ahead into this module?
Yeah, if you think about your SQL Server today, these are the topics you normally look at. If you think there's a broad set of things to do with security, but you have to secure the network through your SQL Server in your environment, and in Azure, there are some interesting things that you need to learn about how to do that. We're going to show you how. You know, you need to give people authentication and access to log into your SQL Server, but guess what? You need to have access outside of your Azure SQL environment. We're going to talk about that and show you how to do that. You need to protect your data, whether it's encryption. It could be connection encryption. It could be the data encryption you have. It could be encryption at rest or features like dynamic data masking. You need to protect your data, and we'll certainly drill in and show you many aspects of that. And finally, you got to manage this security aspect. You got to audit things. You want to take advantage of things in the cloud like Azure Defender in order to get proactive notification and alerting that could compromise security of your deployment. Now, Anna, I love this. This is a suggestion from Anna. I just love this. Look at the bottom of this slide. These are called breadcrumbs. So as we look at these different areas, you'll notice on the slide, we'll change and pivot to show you and keep you on track on which one of these four categories we're doing. So without further ado, Anna, I think we should just dive into it.
Yeah, let's dive into it, starting with network security. Now, Bob and I went back and forth when we were first creating this module about how much of network security we should really include. But we thought it was very important to make sure that everyone, whether you're a data professional or a networking professional, is familiar with some core concepts related to networking for Azure SQL Database and Azure SQL Managed Instance. Today, we're going to start by looking at Azure SQL Database. Now, consider this scenario that we have, where we have our main virtual machine. So here we have our main virtual machine that's connecting to this Azure SQL Database logical server. And this virtual machine is running in Azure. It has a public IP address, and it's located in US East or East US. And it's also contained in a virtual network. So these dotted line boxes are going to represent a different virtual network, which is a way to logically group resources and provide kind of networking boundaries for a given set of resources. Now, we also have a few other virtual networks, one that's also in East US that has an Azure VM connecting to SQL, as well as one in West US, which has an Azure VM trying to connect to SQL. Now, these could be apps or other services, but just for this purpose, we're going to just keep it simple and say they're virtual machines. Now, let's consider the first scenario of how you might connect to this Azure SQL Database logical server. And this is the easiest way to connect. So if you're doing some dev test, you know, sometimes we're just a POC, this is sometimes the best way to kind of get connected really easily. Because what you do is in the portal, and I'll show you in a moment, you basically just check a box, allow access to Azure services, and any service located anywhere in the Azure platform can connect if it has the right credentials and users and all that stuff we'll talk about later, is just able to connect to this Azure SQL Database logical server. Now, what you can't get from this is access from on-premises, and that's because we just allowed access to Azure services, not all services that exist wherever they are. So that's one limitation of this, but I think for just getting started, sometimes this can be really easy to get set up and play. Now, obviously, it's not the most secure method because you're allowing any resource in Azure, even if it's not in your subscription or region, to kind of try to connect to this server. So the next thing that we introduced was firewall rules. And this is the next option you have that's slightly in the direction of being more secure. Now, what firewall rules do is it looks kind of similar, but what you also see is we're able to connect from on-premises. Now, what we've done here is instead of just being able to connect from Azure services like these virtual machines, you have to set a firewall rule. So a firewall rule for these IP addresses for everything that needs to connect. And that can also include your on-prem IP address. So you can add firewall rules and then you're able to connect. So this is slightly more secure because you have to have the right firewall rules, but there are still potential issues here. And one of the big challenges with firewall rules is that, you know, customers now or you, whoever's managing this now needs to make sure you update your firewall rules as things that need access to this database server change IP addresses or new services need to connect, because oftentimes you'll see customers have dynamic IP addresses, so they change. So you're always having to update this. So this can be kind of a pain to maintain. So the next thing we came up with is virtual network rules. And so what changed here is instead of giving access to a specific firewall rule or an IP address, we're actually going to give access to a whole virtual network. So for example, in this scenario, we could give this East US, SQL DB, VNet, East US, we could create a virtual network rule that's going to give it access to this Azure SQL Database logical server. And using other VNet technologies that we won't get into today, like virtual network gateways, VNet to VNet, VNet peering, ExpressRoute, you can basically connect virtual networks together so that you can connect to this Azure SQL Database server. Now, one key thing to call out here, if I just go back to firewall rules, what you're going to see is you're going to be connecting from the public IP address, which might have some concerns. But when you move to virtual network rules, you'll notice that you're now connecting from the private IP address of the Azure virtual machine or other services. And that's just because we're connecting from within the virtual network. So this is, again, slightly more secure. But one thing you're noticing over here is that if you were to do some sort of NS lookup and look at the DNS hierarchy for that Azure SQL Database server, you're going to be able to see information about it, which you might not necessarily want to be publicly available. So the final option, the most recent option we came out with, which we're encouraging most of our customers to use, is called Private Link. Now, what happened with Private Link is now we're able to kind of obfuscate that DNS hierarchy from a public sense. You have the option to actually deny public internet access. And the way this works is you essentially deploy a private endpoint into a virtual network. So it has its own private IP address, and you can only connect to that database server through this private endpoint. Now, there's a lot going on here, a lot of things to consider. I thought it might be useful to just take a look at an example. So let me just show you a few things here in my virtual machine. So I'm going to start in the Azure portal. And oops, what you're seeing here is, let's do one more, is we have this server, AWS server 0602DR. Now, if I go down on the left-hand side, what I can do is I can see the firewalls and virtual network settings under security. Now, I can see a few things. Now, I can't deny public network access because this is using the public IP address. A few other things. We're not going to talk about connection policy today, but I also have allow Azure services and resources accesses to the server set to no because I want to be slightly more secure. But what I am using is a firewall rule. So I basically have this firewall rule for a virtual machine. You can see this is 52, 170, et cetera. And that's actually the virtual machine I'm connecting to today, from today. Now I can confirm this by going into SSMS and connecting to that database server. So you can see it here, it's the DR1. And basically running this select client net address. Now what this is going to do is return the IP address of the client that's connecting to the Azure SQL database logical server. So what I can see here is I'm connecting from that public IP address. Now, one other thing you can check is using this thing called NSLookup. Now, NSLookup is going to allow me to look at the DNS hierarchy for this DR server. So what I'm gonna see is some information that's publicly available about the database. So things that I might not want available, like the control ring, the region, the data slice, the traffic manager, a public IP address. So these are just some things I might not want to be publicly available. So what we did is we came up with private links. So if I go back, let's see, here it is. So this server, so notice it's not the DR server. If I go back down to the left, I can see under firewalls and virtual networks, I actually have no firewall rules as well as no virtual network rules. And I even have the option now to deny public network access if I like, because I'm using this private endpoint. Now, if you deny public network access and you're using the public endpoint, you're not going to be able to connect at all. But what you can also see under private endpoint connections is that I do have a private endpoint here. It's called AWS Server 0406PE, just for private endpoint. Now, if we go back to SSMS and we try connecting, so now this time I'm going to connect to this server, just the non-DR one, the one that has private link enabled. And note, this result would be the same even if I had virtual network rules, because what's happening here is we're connecting from inside the virtual network that the private endpoint as well as that Azure VM is located. So now we're seeing a new IP address, 10.1.0.4. And if I just go back to the portal, what I can show you is that my Windows virtual machine that I'm connecting to is actually 10.1.0.4. But this is a private IP address, so that's going to be just a little bit more secure because we're connecting from inside the virtual network. Now, similarly, I can go back and run the same NSLookup command, but for the non-DR server or the server that has private link enabled, and run that. And what you're seeing now is a lot less information. So we're just seeing the alias, the server name.privatelink.database.net, and this private IP address that we've assigned, and another alias. Now, note, there's nothing really highly secure here. You could even make it so you can't even try to connect to this. So this is definitely the most secure way. So using private link is kind of the way we encourage people to go about securing their services. Now note, you also only can connect to this. So you can't connect directly to the private IP address or this name, which makes it really easy because if you aren't using Private Link today and you move towards private link, you don't have to change any connection strings. And that was by design. So that's kind of the network security for SQL database in a very brief nutshell. Now, we wanted to cover at an even briefer level how that compares to Azure SQL Managed Instance. So if we think about Azure SQL Database, which is what you're seeing on the screen now, you're connecting from this private endpoint from within a virtual network. Now, with Managed Instance, watch this change. It's very similar, except for Managed Instance, it has to be deployed in a dedicated subnet, which is basically like a grouping within a virtual network. And it also has a private IP address associated with it. So it's very similar concepts. There are some things you need to consider because you have to have this subnet configured properly before you deploy a managed instance into it. There's definitely more information about that in the learning module itself. Now, Bob, that was kind of a lot. Can you take us back a step and say, okay, what should people take away from this and how should they think about the actual task for network security?
You were actually right to say in the beginning that we kind of struggled with, you know, how much should we give folks that are really more database professionals information about networking? And I think you did an excellent job. I love the visualizations and I love the way you broke down about something that's less secure to more secure, kind of that layers and levels. So look at this kind of summary of maybe the steps and activities you would do to set up and configure network security for your environment if you're going to use Azure SQL Database or Managed Instance. So as Anna said, consider configuring private link if possible and denying that public network access. That is the most recommended way that we have because, again, that's the most secure way of connecting into a logical server with Azure SQL Database. What if that's not possible? What is the reason why you couldn't use private link? What should you do? Well, again, even though allow access to Azure services is an easy way to get started, we recommend turning that off. You're avoiding giving complete access to everybody inside Azure to get access to your server. And then what you might consider doing is the following: configure your firewall rules and or configuring your virtual network rules. So try private link if not possible, turn off that allow access to Azure services in a production environment and go with firewall or virtual network rules. But for managed instance, as Anna just described, you're going to be configuring a virtual network and subnet as part of the deployment of managed instance, which was one of the promises why people wanted us to do this with managed instance, to be able to include your application or maybe on your on-premises environment within the virtual network and subnets that are secure for managed instance. And by the way, just to make sure you understand, you actually have the ability to do this before you deploy managed instance or as part of deployment. So there are steps within things like the portal where we'll automatically build this virtual network environment. If you do it beforehand, check the documentation pretty carefully because there are some specific requirements to set up this virtual network and subnets. But here's an important point that we've learned from talking to customers as we've presented this. Follow those networking practices in your organization. You likely, in large organizations, have people that understand networking about your data center and your environment. So show them these visualizations, show them these activities, and decide what is best for you and your organization to make your Azure SQL deployment as secure as possible within all the confines of what the limitations could be for your environment.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks, Bob. I think that's, you know, a key call out is that, you know, you should be working with others, especially if you're in a large organization, to make sure you're following the networking best practices. Now we're going to switch to doing a knowledge check. We have two coming up
now. A test?
Yeah.
Anna, you're testing people? What are you doing?
Yeah, you didn't know I was going to test you.
Oh, are you testing me? I'm part of this test? Oh,
well,
no.
You're going to have to give the answers.
Oh, I'm giving the answers today. Great. Okay. Yeah. Way to throw that at me here in the middle of a live presentation in front of thousands of people. Okay. Got it.
Wouldn't be the first time. So this first question is, what is the recommended way to protect your network for Azure SQL Database? So we talked about four options for doing this. I think this should be a pretty straightforward question. So I'm hoping this is up on the poll so that you all can start to answer it. Now, we do have a few questions until I see some of those poll responses coming in. Johan S. says, hi, are there any learning modules where you can practice to create private endpoints? I think that's a great question. I know specifically in this module, We don't have the exact guidance on how to create that because you also would need some sort of virtual network or a virtual machine, and it's just easier to have you deploy just a database. However, in the Learn module, you'll see references to our GitHub page, which is aka.ms/SQL workshops. And in the Azure SQL workshop, we have full guided documentation on how to set up a VM for this exercise, as well as how to create the private endpoint. And there are lots of screenshots too. So if you just want to review it, it's there as well. We also have some videos as part of our big series that we have, Azure SQL for Beginners, that goes through that. So short answer, Johan, yes, there are options for you. Now I am trying to see the poll answers and I am not seeing them.
You're trying to get a pulse to see if everybody is paying attention. That's what you're doing.
Yeah, that's definitely what I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
So let's see, keep answering that poll and I'm hopefully going to see some answers coming in. Ah, yes, I do. Okay, so it looks like we have 570 votes for this. So that's really exciting and it's only increasing. Awesome to have you all with us. But it looks like we have about 2% of people saying answer A, allow access to Azure services. 10% people saying firewall rules, 9% saying virtual network rules, but 80% of you saying private link. So Bob, let me put you on the spot. What's the answer here?
Well, I think you know how I work here. It's all about elimination. So, you know, I actually was pretty decent at taking these in tests in school. And I always did the process of elimination to resolve questions, especially if I didn't exactly know the answer. So think about this question. The key is recommended, right? And if you saw multiple times we said, allow access to Azure services, you can do it to get up quickly, but not recommended. So it's not A, right? It's definitely not that. Now, firewall rules and virtual network rules are interesting, and there are a way, but you talked about, even with those, a limitation of where you're still kind of got something public, right, on the internet for your server, even though you've got this protection. So either one of those are probably not the recommended way. And notice it says the recommended way, not a recommended way. And so private link to me has got to be the answer. And I think you emphasized, and we did in that summary, how private link is the recommended way, if possible, to protect your network.
Yes, exactly. So well done, everyone. It seems like most of you got that. Now I have almost 800 responses. So well done, folks. We're going to move on to a harder question. So this question is tricky. I try to introduce these things so that we keep Bob on his toes. So let's talk about this question. So consider the example from the unit where the Azure VM public IP address is 174.17.218.16, and the private IP address is 10.0.0.2. Now, when using virtual network rules, so remember virtual network rules, to configure network access, so you're connecting from the virtual network, what will be returned from that query select client net address? Now, this is something you didn't see explicitly in the demo, but I did give some hints to it, and you did see it in the visualizations. Bob, do you think we're going to be able to trick people with this one?
Well, you've tricked me, I mean, before, so yeah, I'm sure. But, you know, it's interesting, the choices you did. You must like be a professor in another life or something, because you create these hard questions that people are like, oh, great, it's one of those kind of type questions, you know, that you see in exams. Yeah, exactly. In fact, I know you graduated not long ago with, I think, your master's, right? So you still got that in your head. That's what it is. So
yeah, I'm very familiar with the not question.
I'm sure that's coming at some point. Yeah, I'm looking at the poll myself here. I guess we're seeing a little, I can see it, right?
Yeah, definitely. It looks like a lot of people are coming in with answers A and B. Not a lot of people thinks it's C or D. Like B is winning by a decent amount, if you could say winning. why don't we go ahead and get started talking about this, Bob? What do you think? How should
Well, I'm going to use the same method, Anna. I'm going to use the process of elimination, right? So you've got two IP addresses, a public and a private here. Using virtual network rules. And that query, I saw you do a demo of that query, and I know SQL pretty well. So that is an IP address of a client, you know, connecting into a SQL server, which is in cases a logical server. So process elimination would be the following. It can't be D. It's got to be one of those two. So D is not appropriately the answer. And it can't be C because you only have one result coming back. It's got to be one or the other. So we're down to the A or B choice, right? Now, here's the key. You mentioned this before several times. If you go use private link or virtual network rules, you are in a virtual network. Therefore, the client is going to use the private IP address of the virtual network. So I would say it's B.
Awesome.
Ah, look at that. Yeah, there you go. Whew.
Well done.
Okay.
You've survived yet another knowledge check.
Exactly. I love these checks. This is a good way of kind of getting the pulse and making sure and kind of summarizing what we're teaching today in our module.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, folks, for your participation. We have quite a few more polls coming up, so keep paying attention. We're going to shift gears and talk about access.
Yeah, remember where we are in our breadcrumbs, right? We did network security. And by the way, we're not suggesting that these are the order you have to do things for security. This is just the way we organize today's content in the module. But network security could be an early thing you figure out on how to try to make sure that people access and connect to your Azure SQL environment. But you got to give people authentication to log into this thing, right? Now, think about your data center today. In your data center today, you have organizations that are going to give you access outside of SQL to access something, right? Well, in Azure, we have the same concept, and we have a concept called role-based access control, or RBAC. This is actually applicable across all of Azure, not just Azure SQL. So if you think about this whole process, somebody's got to deploy the Azure SQL database or the managed instance, and then access within the portal or within command line interfaces the deployment itself, the Azure resource, not logging into SQL, but outside of SQL. And so RBAC is done for that purpose. And in fact, look at that bullet point number two. Think of this as security rights outside the managed instance or database. Now, what's interesting is you get to decide in your organization, typically you have people that are like owners of subscriptions and contributors of subscriptions. There are roles that exist within this environment that Azure allows. Now, so what you can do is you can separate duties here a little bit from people accessing the SQL environment outside of it and then actually getting access inside the SQL environment. Now, what I love what we've done is giving you some built-in roles you see below here that can be very helpful to you. And then let me give you an example because I've just used this recently. You get the SQL managed instance contributor. Let's assume for a second you set up managed instances, okay? Actually, have a concept called instance pools. You built an instance pool, you set up 5 managed instances, and what you'd like to do, Anna, here's what I'd like to do. I'm gonna give Anna access to one of those instances, but I don't want her to access the resource group outside of the instance or even the overall subscription. I just want her to have access to the managed instance itself. And then I'll pick up my friend Elaine Dormal. I'm gonna give Elaine the other managed instance access, but I don't want her to see Anna's. That'd be kind of nice, right? I don't want him to get into the resource group to see both these instances. I can use this managed instance contributor, assign the roles to both of their users in Azure, and achieve that separation. So this is a way to control access of Azure resources outside of SQL. But you got to give access to access inside of SQL somehow, and you're used to doing that in SQL Server through things like logins. So let's talk a little bit about that. Authentication into Azure SQL itself.
Yeah, definitely. And as we get into that, I did want to call out Sven earlier put in Windows off. Tell me more.
Well, look at that. They knew that we were going to talk about this, Anna, right? So in SQL, you're used to this concept of mixed mode authentication, right? And what that means is you have Windows authentication and SQL authentication. And mixed modes means you can do either one. Well, today for Azure SQL, we force this. Why do we force this? Because by default today, you are required to have a SQL Server login that's a server admin. Now for Azure Database, in the logical server, that SQL will become a server level principal. For managed instance, it'll be a member of the sysadmin server role for MI. And as somebody asked, I need Windows authentication. So what you have ability today is to use Azure Active Directory authentication. So let's kind of drill down, Anna, between the differences, like how would this work for managed instance and how would it work for Azure Database? So as it turns out, Aside from this SQL admin, which is required when you deploy managed instance, you also can set up an Azure Active Directory admin. That's kind of nice. Then you would go into your SQL instance and create SQL logins or Azure Active Directory logins. Now, just like you do in SQL Server today, you can take your databases, create database users, and map those to those logins. We do support, however, in managed instance, the contained database concept as you see in SQL Server. And then we announced last fall, for support for things like distributed transactions in managed instance. So we have this concept called a server trust group you can use to support integrated access between the managed instances for things like DTC. So for Azure Database, it's similar but slightly different. You do get the ability, again, in addition to your SQL admin, you get an Azure AD server admin if you'd like. You can also create SQL logins for the logical server that goes with your database. And in fact, we've given you these new roles only specifically to Azure Database and the logical server, which are called Login Manager roles and DB Manager roles for limited server admin type access for the logical server. Just like with managed instance in SQL, you can create database users and map them to logins. But Anna, this is what I love we've done about Azure Database. You can create a contained database user within just your database, and that can be an Azure Active Directory user. That's pretty cool because you could go in and say, hey, I just want to go directly to a database because that's the concept of Azure Database. Give them an Active Directory account and map that to a user, and that's their access through their Azure AD authentication. That's a really great, powerful feature of Azure SQL Database.
Yeah, definitely. So if we take a step back and think about the tasks, right? We talked about the capabilities. Let's talk about the tasks. It's very similar to what you would do with SQL Server. And you'll hear us mention a lot in this module. And if you tune in for more sessions like this, you'll hear us say, it's just SQL. So, you know, what's the process here? Well, you're going to deploy with a SQL Server admin, and that's something that's required. Then once you have that, you can create other admins, including setting an Azure AD admin over the server. And then those admins can create users, and you can grant access just like SQL. So let's take a look at an example, a very simple example of how you can do this. So I'm back in my virtual machine. Let me just navigate to that database server. I'm in this AWS server 0602. And down on the left-hand side, I can see under settings, Active Directory admin. So you can see I've set myself as the Active Directory admin. And one call out I want to say here is that you can only have one Azure Active Directory admin. Now, that doesn't mean this couldn't be a security group that had multiple people in it, but you can only have one Active Directory admin assigned to a server. So just keep that in mind as you go forward. Now, let's go back to SSMS, and I just want to show you a few things. So what you can see here is this server, I'm actually connecting using Azure Active Directory. So using my Microsoft account, I'm using multi-factor authentication. How you connect is going to depend on how your organization is set up. But inside there, what I can do is I have this little script, which is also in the Microsoft Learn module. And I can just go through this general process of granting others access to SQL. So I deployed with the SQL Server admin, I created an Azure AD account, and now I'm going Azure AD admin, and now I'm going to do things like creating a new SQL login in the context of master. Now, once I do that, I can then connect into a specific database and actually create a user from that login. And just like SQL, until I give them read or write access, they cannot read or write data in the database. So that's a simple example, hopefully one that's familiar for many SQL users already. Now, Bob mentioned this idea of contained database users. So what this means is that instead of creating a login and master and then a user in the database, I can just create a user in the context of the database, specifically with a login. So I don't have to create it in the master and then in the database, I can do go straight into the database. So this is something that's really useful. And for anyone that knows Bob, he's a huge Tennessee Titans fan. So, you know, this is kind of the password that he might pick. Now, if you were to connect to this, or if Bob was wanting to connect to this, you notice he would use his login and password, but he's only going to have access to this specific database. So for example, if I tried to browse the server, he's not even going to be able to do that. So he can't see any of the other databases in this instance. All right, now finally, we talked about Azure AD. And Azure AD is similar to what you saw earlier in that it is this contained database users. And it's very easy to do. You just add create user and we have this new syntax from external provider. So I can run that and create him as a user in that the specific database. And then just like before, if I want him to be able to read data or write data, I have to give him access to do that. So all in all, it's really just like SQL. So that's a pretty simple example. Be sure to keep putting your questions in the chat as they come up. But for now, we're going to talk a little bit more about encryption.
That's all right, Anna. But before we go further, you know, I reserve the right to create other demos in the future where I, you know, say that you love the Dallas Cowboys or one of my favorite sports teams. So once again, Anna picks on Bob on her demos. It's okay. I'm used to it. Hey, so network security, right? Then identity and access. Doesn't it feel a little bit like SQL Server? But it's got differences, and we need to have differences to make sure you run properly in the Azure environment. What about protecting your data? It all starts with encryption. And usually with a SQL environment, it first starts with connection encryption. Now notice this first comment that's very important. We force encryption on connections for Azure Database and Managed Instance if the client driver supports it. That's very interesting because it is possible to use an older version of like a driver that may not support this. We'll allow you to connect, right? But we won't be using encryption. And there's a way for you to actually check and make sure that's working. It's also a great tip though, because it'd be better if you could set encryption on your client so that we don't have to actually do another packet exchange to force that. Now, let's say though, with these older client drivers out there, you would actually like to force a minimum TLS version. Now, as it turns out, the latest versions of TLS can be more secure than earlier versions. So you have that ability. You have the ability, you may have seen a hint of that as Anna showed you in the portal when she was showing you security features and networking, that you can force a specific minimal TLS version. And guess what that may do? It actually may reject older clients that don't support that version. Another great way for you to be ensuring of a better secure environment when you're connecting back and forth between clients and Azure SQL. Now, just like SQL Server, we support column-level encryption through T-SQL environments. That looks just like a SQL Server. You have access to all of that. It's something that's been around for a long time, and we still all support that. Now, for data at rest, transport data encryption is an important key feature of SQL Server, and this is on by default in Azure SQL. So we fully support that. That's there. You can control that through the portal, through CLIs, and even through T-SQL. You may have seen in 2016 us offer a new functionality called Always Encrypted. And we enhance that capability in Azure SQL and in SQL 19. One of the cool things about Always Encrypted, it's an end-to-end system, kind of like this diagram right here. And the great thing, it's separation of duties. So the admins of the database environment do not have access to the keys, so they can therefore not see unencrypted data. And you kind of see that the idea in this particular diagram is the unencryption happening on the client where they own access to all the keys. But here's a cool thing about Azure, because we have Azure Key Vault, those keys we're talking about that you would use for encryption can be integrated very easily. You can even bring your own key in this type environment. You may have seen recently us announce the ability to do secure enclaves for Azure SQL Database, and it's now in preview. And it's really nice functionality because we're going to take advantage of chip technology on the server now to actually do the unencryption. We're still doing separated duties, but it can be a more secure and a faster environment, and it opens new possibilities for richer query capabilities. Now, one thing about Always Encrypted, you need to understand there are certain operators that are supported and not supported. So your typical things like joins, group by, distinct, some of those things with T-SQL, that all works with Always Encrypted. But there are some things with indexing and so forth that may not be supported unless you use this enclaves concept. So I'm really excited to see enclaves, which were announced with SQL 19, now come to that Azure SQL database environment. So Anna, I would say that overall, from an encryption point of view, we have everything you need to be secure in your Azure SQL deployments.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, similar to encryption, you might think maybe a little lighter is something called masking. Now, let's talk about this concept of masking or dynamic data masking, which is available in SQL Server and Azure SQL. Now, if we take a look at this example, what we have is this T-SQL language that's allowing us to alter specific columns and use this add masked width. So basically we're able to select a function. There's just a few of them listed here, whether it's partial and you specify what it is, whether it's an email, whether it's random, and there's one other one available. And so what this is gonna do is for normal end users, for that example, you're gonna see those options are going to be masked, and you can see that below for social security number and email, as well as salary. You can see salary is now a random number between 1 and 20,000. So this is something that's very interesting. And one other thing I wanted to call out is for social security number, you might consider, in addition to masking or in place of masking, actually using encryption. So it enhances that security of that access to that very important private information. Now, if you need access to this data, or you're in some sort of role or user that needs access, you can use the verbiage grant unmask to, and then, you know, grant folks access to see that data, which you see on the right-hand side here. And then if at some point in time you decide you no longer want them to have access, you can similarly use the nomenclature revoke unmask, and that's a possibility. Now, this is available in SQL Server as well, but what you can get in the Azure portal is also these recommendations of fields to mask. So here we're getting some recommendations around first name, phone number, email address, and actual address IDs. So that's something you get in addition in the Azure SQL portal. Now, again, if we take a step back and think about what the tasks are associated with this setting up data protection and encryption, there are a few things you might want to consider. Using TDE, so if you have a new database, by default, TDE is going to be turned on. So you want to evaluate the use of that, especially if you're migrating, because it might not be on by default. And also how you're going to manage the key rotations, if you want to let Microsoft manage them or use something like Bring Your Own Key or BYOK. You also want to take advantage of dynamic data masking in certain situations to mask sensitive data from other users. And Bob talked about always encrypted and some of the options that are available there. And then also the TLS, so ensuring your applications are going to force the most secure type of connection. Now we covered a lot. Let's take a step back and do another question. Now, this one is one I recently covered. Bob, I don't think you should have any issues with this one.
You say that every time. I mean, you throw a question at me like, oh, I'm sure you'll get this, Bob, in front of like a huge audience. So I better show up.
You maybe always I'll get it.
What the poll says. I'm going to wait and see what anybody else thinks before I answer this. But I'm using this process of elimination, Anna, as I'm looking through this, right, about these things that you just talked about. I think one of the cool things about dynamic data masking I love is that it takes away that logic that you have to put in the app, right? You can put this as declarative T-SQL and the app is free. So if you had to change masking or policies, you don't have to go change your application. You just do it on the back end. So I think it's one of the coolest features that we've launched with SQL and Azure SQL. So, okay, so are you looking at the poll now, Anna, or?
Yeah, I am looking at the poll. Looks like we've got a good number of answers coming in. It looks like people are really, you know, mastering this one pretty well. We'll give people a few more seconds to get their votes in it, but it looks like most people are landing on one answer, which is B, you can grant or revoke the unmask capability with T-SQL. Let's see what other people think as that comes in, but Bob, maybe you can start taking us through the, you know, process of elimination.
Well, the question is, how do you manage who has access to view masked data? So if you look at like C, for example, anyone can query masked data that can view masked data, that like goes against the whole idea, right? So that it can't be C, because that just goes against the idea of doing masking. And then it can't be A, because the whole idea that you just talked about was being able to do a granting to a certain type of role or something. So it can't be that just a server admin can view masked data. That really makes sense. So it can't be A. And then D is more about, if I remember correctly, and in your example, the add mask is just to add the mask, not to grant who has access to the mask. So it can't be D. Therefore, I would think it has to be B. Without knowing the answer, I eliminated A, C, and D, and I'm left with B, right?
Yes, exactly. And it looks like most people got that. I think a few people got tripped up by D, which is also kind of a reasonable, you know, thing to say. But it seems like most people got that. So well done, everyone. We're going to move to the next question. I'm going to put that up. But while everyone's taking a look at that, we did get a question in from Matthew related to encryption. Maybe, Bob, you have some insights. He says, what is the latency with added encryption?
Yeah, if you think about transparent data encryption, so one concern there might be is the overhead at data encryption at rest for I/O. And certainly that is a consideration for you. We turn it on by default for a reason, though. We turn default reason in Azure because we have found that's a very important security feature for customers. And we have found most customers think that any kind of issue there would be negligible. You know, if I always encrypted, there is a consideration there because of the fact that in some type of operations, things have to be sent back across the wire. This is why enclaves could be really, really important. So always encrypt enclaves is really going to make sure in that environment that you're not going to see significant any kind of issues there from a performance perspective. At least that's my perspective of using it. And then again, TDE, this is why you said evaluate the use of TDE. Just double check that that is a feature that you want to use. Certainly very intensive IO operations may have some impact. But again, we turn it on by default in Azure, and a lot of people use it. So I'm pretty confident that you can use it yourself in those two environments without significant, as you asked, latency or performance issues.
Awesome. Thanks, Bob. Matthew, hopefully that helped. Now, for everyone going ahead and answering the question, just to be clear, is when doing equality comparisons on encrypted data with Always Encrypted, which operators are currently supported in Azure SQL? Now, this one is kind of tricky because it wasn't on the slide. Bob, you just kind of snuck it in there and we added it as a question.
What, did you add this as I was saying it out loud or something like that?
So, you know, I'm looking for sneaky opportunities.
Exactly. You want to go ahead and me to go through it? So.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I can say it looks like most people, it looks like 85% of people answering are saying all of the above. But yeah, Bob, why don't you take us through it?
Well, I think it's important to know that Always Encrypted does have some limitations without enclaves. I think enclaves actually open up the scope of what we call rich query computing. But these are standard operators you want to be able to do. Joins, group bys, and distinct, those kind of type things from T-SQL. So, you know, it's true. A is true, B is true, and C is true. All of those work with Always Encrypted. And we did kind of mention that in the deck. And there's Anna again, you know, throwing in a question that we didn't even really clearly call out. She's really trying to keep people on their seat today. But yeah, the answer, Anna's got to be D, that any of those work.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks. And thanks. Nice work, everyone. Looks like 84% of people got that. So well done. Okay. So next, we're going to talk about auditing, and this is cool because we also get to make an announcement for something that's new in auditing, so that will be fun. Now, when we talk about auditing, there are kind of two levels. There's the Azure level, which you can audit those Azure level activities using the Azure Monitor logs, and then we're going to talk about SQL Server audit and for Azure SQL Managed Instance and whatever is different for Azure SQL Database. So let's start with Azure SQL Managed Instance. Now, this is using SQL Server audit, which works just like SQL Server, except the storage for the Azure Blob files, sorry, the storage for the XEL files are stored in Azure Blob because, of course, Azure SQL Managed Instance doesn't have access to your local file system, and you don't have access to the Azure SQL Managed Instance file system. So that's really the biggest difference for that. We also have support for Azure Monitor Logs and Event Hubs. And then it's also important to call out that failure or continue options are supported, but not shut down. And you know, the big reason behind this is with Azure SQL Managed Instance, you cannot shut it down because that would go against some of our availability SLAs, which we keep in place. Now, for Azure SQL Database, it's slightly different. We use something called Azure SQL Auditing for Azure SQL Database, which is powered by SQL Server Audit. And when you think about the default action groups, they are Bash Completed Group, Successful Database Authentication Group, and Failed Database Authentication Group. So there's no exact audit level audit action group, but you can get some of that through the Bash Completed Group audit. Now, a few other things to mention here. One that was just announced this week is the audit of Microsoft operations is supported in general availability. So what this means is if you open a support ticket and someone from Microsoft has to go in and look at various things, you are actually now able to audit those operations that are done by Microsoft support. So that's pretty big. It's helpful for a lot of customers to just kind of ease their mind with what people are doing, even when we given permission. Now, the other thing that was announced was the GA capability for sending your logs to Azure Log Analytics and Azure Event Hubs. Now, in the exercises, you can actually go through an exercise that sets up logging. There's several exercises that go through setting up auditing, as well as to Log Analytics and to Azure Storage, and even analyzing some of these logs. And that kind of leads nicely into monitoring.
I put myself on mute. Sorry about that, Anna. So think about what Anna said from a perspective of auditing as the overall monitoring and managing security task, right? So outside of your SQL deployment, you definitely want to use these activity logs and things like RBAC auditing, you know, for Azure monitoring. That's for sure. That's like one thing you just want to go do, right? But Anna, let's break down what you need to do for Azure SQL Managed Instance for managing and monitoring and Azure SQL Database. Let's look at both of those real quick. Okay, so for Managed Instance, Anna just talked about auditing. So what you're going to want to do from a task perspective is configure SQL Server Audit for Azure Managed Instance just like you do for SQL Server Day. Pick those action groups, decide how do you want to go do that. Now, if you're a SQL Server person for years, you may have seen this, that in SQL Server by default, if you have a failed login in the error log, we actually track that. You actually can see, oh, somebody failed, because you'll get that login failed message with some sort of weird state number. And then as an admin, you can go in the error log and see what was the true reason for the login failure. I've used that for years supporting customers with SQL Server. We also have the ability in SQL Server to turn on successful logins, which can really litter your error log, but it requires a reboot. So, and since it managed instance, you can't do that. What you can do is use extended events. Anna talked about, we've talked a little bit about that some. You can use extended events itself to track login events. And therefore, if you wanted to go track specifically failed and successful logins, independent of using SQL audit, you could do that with a managed instance. Now, what about for Azure SQL Database? So just as Anna mentioned, you want to configure Azure SQL auditing. And again, we call it that, but behind the scenes, it's SQL Server audit for Azure Database. But there's a few extras here. There's dynamic management views, there's metrics and alerts within Azure monitoring to monitor security events for your Azure database. Here's an example, sys.eventlog, which is a kind of like a DMV for your logical server. You can track things like successful number of successful or failed connections and kind of some timestamp intervals for it, and a number of connections that were blocked by a firewall. And since you can get those metrics from Azure SQL Database, they show up in things like the Azure portal or in your actual Azure monitoring system through activity logs or metrics, and you can do alerting on that. So for example, Anna, I could set up alert to say, hey, if so many people were blocked by a firewall, I want to get alerted on it because maybe somebody's trying to go in and attack, you know, my environment. So that's from the perspective of a managed instance database, you know, the kind of things you're going to do from a management perspective. Now, there's a couple of things you may want to do proactively, and we're going to drill into some things more on this, but you may want to set up alerts for something called advanced threat protection. And you're going to see, and we're going to talk about in a second, you're going to see how Azure SQL is hooked into the overall Azure Security Center, and you have ways of getting alerts through that or also monitoring. So Anna, I think it'd be kind of cool if we took an end to this management section by talking about what's different about Azure. Like, is there, you guys have compared SQL all day long, but yeah. What are the benefits in the cloud? So it all starts with data discovery and classification. This is the capability for you to go classify your data. We've demonstrated this before with Azure SQL and SQL Server to many customers. Think of GDPR scenarios where you would like to classify columns with a certain category and label, and therefore you can go along later and do reporting and discover what is the kind of data in my system. So that would be kind of cool if you wanted to go do something like that. Now, you also have the ability to do other things that are really, really cool in the cloud. We call these Azure Defender. It's a new name that was kind of branded last fall. And Azure Defender for Azure SQL is made up of two things. One is a vulnerability assessment, and one is something called advanced threat protection. Vulnerability assessments think of this as like best practices, us kind of analyzing your deployment and assessing and telling you where we think you may be vulnerable based on how you've configured your Azure SQL database or your managed instance. And then advanced threat protection is really interesting. So Anna, let me show you a little bit in the next slide. What is really advanced threat protection? Like, what are you getting out of this? This is us. This is really good, great stuff. This is us using machine learning algorithms to detect threats ahead of time in your environment. We're trying to detect potential SQL injection attacks, and we're trying to detect certain activities that may come into your environment. So if somebody, for example, Anna, you have an app that's connecting all day long from a different data center somewhere, and that's your normal connection. And all of a sudden, we detect somebody's trying to connect from some unknown place into your environment, we can alert you to that. So you can monitor it or you can get alerts based on this. And this is what I love. You can go in and see these alerts for your entire Azure tenant in the security center for multiple resources or specifically for SQL. So what might be kind of fun is to kind of see a demonstration of this.
I think so.
Let's try it. So let's see if this is going to work. I'm going to share my screen here. Right, here we go. Let's get this here. And then here we go. Whoops. There we go. What do you think, Anna? Does that look
good
to you?
Looks great. Yeah.
Okay. So like Anna's been showing you things in the portal, this is an Azure SQL database I've got deployed. And she showed you over here this kind of resource menu where you can go various tasks for your database deployment. You'll notice over here, and Anna, this has kind of changed over the last year a little bit when we demonstrated this, and this is what it looks like today. Data discovery and classification for your database will look something like this when you first bring it up. And what are we showing here? Well, first of all, you just see a report of something called labels and types. Now, what might be nice is, wouldn't it be nice if Azure would give me recommendations? So I can click here and it can look at the actual column names and suggest to me what these might be. It's possible this is contact info, or it might be possible this should be GDPR. I can go in here and I can select all of these. I can accept my recommendations, right? Then I can save them, which is kind of nice. And then I can go back and look at this overview again, and I can see what I get. And if I click this in my overview, you will now see I've got columns set up for this. Now, you might ask yourself right now, and Anna's asked me this before, Bob, this is interesting. I can see what's GDPR, I can see over here, but is there any other benefit to this thing? Well, guess what, Anna? With auditing now, I can audit who queries these columns. So if you want to have an audit to say, hey, somebody queried a GDPR column, you have access to that if you enable SQL auditing, because that's now built in once you classify your data. Another thing that's really cool about this is it's all built into metadata in the SQL Server in system tables themselves. So this functionality exists both in SQL Server 2019 and also in Azure SQL. What about this Azure Defender concept? If I'll go click on Security Center, I might get a view like this. Now, this is interesting. Notice here that it's, first of all, it's telling me as a recommendation, why don't you go classify your data, Bob, because I found some columns that may make sense. So that's kind of nice to have that recommendation. But as I scroll further, what the heck is this SQL injection thing? I'm going to come back to that one. That's a security alert based on that advanced threat protection I talked about. But first, let's look at vulnerability assessments. This is a thing that we're doing where we're scanning not your data, but the configuration of your database and environment. And we're using expertise that we have to give you some things you may need to go take a look at. But this isn't us just sitting around creating this stuff. Anna, this is based on industry standards like CIS and FedRAMP. We've looked at those secure type recommendations that those organizations have for data, and we've applied rules, and we keep those rules up to date based on those standards. So I can kind of drill into one of these things. Like, for example, a high recommendation for something that I might want to take and look at. And it's really, I love what they're going to show here. They're going to show me more details now. It's like, what is this all of a sudden? So if I click in here, I now get more information going on to my database, or look at this, even to the logical server. So let me click in on one of these and see the details of it. This is giving you more details about the rule itself. It's a description, it's the impact. Notice here's this benchmark reference. And then you're going to love this. We're going to show you the query that we use to go generate this and even give you a remediation script. So if you want to go just say, you can even use the query editor in the portal, I'd like to go to remediate this problem, you can do it. Now, Anna, maybe though, you have looked at this and said, you know, this is good for me, I'm okay with this. You can approve it as a baseline. And the next time we scan it, we will not flag this as a rule. You can go back and clear it later if you'd like. Let's go back to that. Let's go back to what we called the potential SQL injection incident. Like, what is this thing? If I click in here, this is an alert, and I can, by the way, and I get an email or even a text message on this if this happens, and I get a lot of interesting information about what's going on here. Now, I can click a little more into this and get the full details of the actual injection attack. And what do we mean by an injection attack? We mean we've detected a query pattern where an application has tried to connect to your Azure SQL database, and you may have heard this before, they're trying to go play some funny business here with string manipulation to gain access to your Azure SQL environment. And we've seen this from applications sometimes that don't do well protection of things like allowing dynamic strings to be typed into things like web forms. You can even go further here. You can get investigation steps to go figure out what to do further. Love this type of thing in environment, Anna. And here's why. If I go click on Security Center for all of Azure, look at this. I have an Azure Defender coverage for every Azure resource that I have, including SQL Server on virtual machines, Azure SQL databases, and we're even investigating how do we do this in Azure Arc? How do you do this maybe in Azure Arc enabled SQL servers? Azure Defender for SQL for us is now our de facto standard to use the power of Azure to give you and proactively alert to you, give you best practices from vulnerability assessments, and then notify you of things like SQL injections. How cool would it be to make sure that you are protected and would see SQL injections across any SQL asset that you had, whether that be on premises or in the cloud? That is the power of what we're doing with Azure Defender for SQL.
Awesome. That's really cool, Bob. Thanks for sharing. The other thing I wanted to call out, which is always interesting, is when you talk to the team about this, their ultimate goal is Azure Defender for SQL anywhere. And I just love that we're, kind of syndicating across all platforms on how we do Azure Defender. So now we're going to, quiz you guys a little bit. I have a tricky one here. This is another one I didn't specifically mention, but I think you can all use deductive reasoning, hopefully, and figure out which one the answer is. But the question is, which of the following T-SQL for auditing is not supported in Azure SQL Managed Instance?
And Anna, that was a little tricky of you. Kind of heard how you questioned that. So I'm sure the audience is going to be sitting here going, okay, let me put, again, use that process of elimination, folks, that I taught you already. See if you can do it that way.
Yeah, and think about Azure SQL Managed Instance, what you might and might not have access to and how that might play out here. There's a little hint for folks.
Yep. What are you seeing, Anna? What are you getting here?
Looks like, we're getting some of everything.
This is early voting.
You're early, sorry. Yeah.
I didn't even use that term, early voting. This is preliminary results coming in to the news desk. This is really kind of cool to see this live feed of how people are learning from what you've taught here.
Yeah, I think it looks like there's one that's in the lead. I won't say which one yet for those of you that haven't answered yet.
Yeah.
And then others are trailing and the gap between seems to be growing. So hopefully that's a good thing.
Well, one thing as you're thinking through this, folks, as you're answering it, remember we talked about this. This is SQL Server Audit as you use today. Managed Instance supports that. So we do support this T-SQL syntax. I like the way you did this question because even though you have Azure SQL auditing where you would typically, I think you do that, of course, through like the portal of CLIs to configure those things. You have the ability to use T-SQL just like SQL Server Audit with a managed instance, but there's a twist to it. And I think that's what you're trying to see what people will say here.
Let's go ahead and start talking about it and then I'll share what everyone thought.
Well, once again, Anna, which by the way, funny inside story, we always tell these stories. Anna, this particular question, she threw it out. I'm like, Anna, you got the wrong answer. She's like, read it again. I'm like, yeah. Which of the following SQL Server auditing is not supported in Azure SQL Managed Instance? And I noticed you gave the audience a slight break. You kind of emphasized the not piece. So we said SQL Server Audit to blob storage is supported. That's the URL. So it can't be A because that is allowed. Remember, it's a not question. External monitor is like, I think like, is that like Event Hub or something, right? That's like the external resources, which we said we supported that. So B can't be it. And D can't be it because A and B can't be it. Therefore, C has to be the answer because we said you do not have access to the file system of the local managed instance. So therefore, it can't be C. And C's got to be the answer.
Yes. Yeah. So C is the answer. And this is a confusing one, especially because we didn't talk about the T-SQL syntax. So I'm willing to kind of give everyone a break on this one. We didn't talk about the to URL or to external monitor. For this, you'll have to go deeper, which you can do in the module itself in Microsoft Learn. We have one more question for you all today. Yes, we have another question. Okay. So you guys have a chance. someone commented, Carl commented, Bob, stop her. She's making me think again.
Well, I'm with you, dude. I don't get it. I'm with you, man. Carl, you and I, we're the same. I get it.
That is awesome.
Only ways you can monitor security events for Azure SQL database. Okay.
So I think this is our last poll. We still have some content remaining, but this is our last poll. And
okay. We're about done, right? Okay.
And this question is tricky as well because I believe you mentioned it, Bob, but I'm not sure. If it was super explicit. So we'll see how folks do.
Haven't you said that every time? This is a tricky question. Like every question we had, you're like, this is tricky.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if every question was super obvious, then how fun would this be?
Well, apparently Carl, he'd like to take a brain break. So, okay, like me too. Okay, I'm looking at the results too to see what's going on here. Which is what you want? Okay, interesting.
Yeah, looks like you can go ahead and start talking about it.
Well, I did. You know, you were tricky. Okay, I admit you were tricky in this. You said, which of the following ways that you can monitor security-related events? You didn't say, which of the following ways you can monitor a certain thing or not? Because we talked about the fact that Azure SQL auditing can do something. But remember, I mentioned how you can do like sys event log, right? For number of blocked connections for the firewalls, number of failed connections, successful connections. And since that's like a DMV, it's all part of the alerting and metric system. So if I'm looking at this answer, A is correct, but B is also correct. Therefore, it's got to be D because I don't have an A and B answer, right? So, and then I said metrics alert. So the only answer that's possible here would be D, yeah.
Right, yeah. And the alerts you talked about, for example, with advanced threat protection. So you have that as well.
You have advanced threat protection too. That's right, exactly. Yeah. So. I'm
and
sure
people did pretty well.
You know what? I'm looking at they did very well there, actually. I agree. Yeah, that's good.
Awesome.
They're kind of getting this stuff.
Yeah. That's good. That makes me feel good that you guys are hopefully getting this stuff.
Yeah. Hey, and now let me summarize kind of where we've been, right? I mean, look at our breadcrumbs below here, right? You first talked about security capabilities. And again, the key thing we're trying to teach you today is it's just SQL, but it also is SQL integrated with Azure. So we're going to give you those security capabilities that you need to secure your SQL environment, enterprise environment, and Azure. And then select that authentication method that works for your organization. Maybe SQL Auth is fine. Maybe you want to add in Azure AD. Remember, one of our recommendations was for Azure Database, use that contained user concept with Azure AD authentication. It's very powerful. You know, Anna showed you how to configure your network, but notice the recommendation. Configure your network to allow connections from the right places. Work with your networking team based on those diagrams Anna showed you to how to get that network connection the right way for your organization. And then use our data encryption best practices. We have a security playbook out there you can read in our documentation. It talks about how to set up TDE, how to use TLS, how to use these various things like Always Encrypted. And then look at the power of Azure Defender for SQL, where you said Azure SQL, Defender for SQL everywhere. Set up those alerts. Monitor the Azure Security Center across all of your Azure assets. That is one of the powers we think Azure Defender brings to you. So we've done network security, identity and access, data protection, security management. We've covered all these things to show you, I think, what the power of Azure SQL can bring for security, Anna.
Yeah, definitely. And if you didn't have enough today, we have a ton more resources for you. Really just, you know, a sleuth of them. The first one, just to mention them briefly so you have some highlights. The first one is to this whole learning path, Azure SQL Fundamentals on Microsoft Learn. So that's where you're going to find this specific module, as well as modules related to the rest of the learning path, performance, availability, deploy and configure, introduction, and putting it all together with some very interesting case studies. If you're looking for the slides, or for some extra exercises like the private endpoint one, then you can go to the second resource, which is our GitHub page, aka.ms/SQL workshops. You can select the Azure SQL workshops, and that's where you're going to find these slides as well as some other exercises to try out. Another thing I wanted to call out is videos from our team. Shameless plug here, I host Data Exposed on Channel 9 and YouTube. We go live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, and we release recorded episodes on Thursdays at 9 a.m. Pacific. And would love to see you check that out. And Bob and I actually did a 61 video series called Azure SQL for Beginners. So if you want to go into specific things and not watch a whole module, you can check that out as well. And finally, books. Last year was a busy year. Bob released a book called Azure SQL Revealed, which really brings a lot of the learnings here, goes a little bit deeper, has really awesome stories. So definitely recommend Azure SQL Revealed. And then myself and a few other members of the Azure SQL team wrote this book for developers. So if you're a developer or you're new to Azure SQL Database, then definitely recommend checking out that book. Now, as far as Learn Live goes, again, there's this main module that you can access at aka.ms/LRN249. You can also go to Learn Live and please complete your session evaluation. It should be on your screen now and through a lot of the sessions. So we really appreciate if you can give us your feedback, good or bad, so we can know if we should do things like this more or if there's anything we can do differently. Now, if you're into these modules, which I think you'll really enjoy them, you should check out the Cloud Skills Challenge as part of Microsoft Ignite. If you do one of the challenges, you're going to be able to get a free certification exam, which is going to be great savings and also allow you to kind of get certified for the learning and the time you spent into this. Now, Bob, we have some exciting news about LearnTV. Now, LearnTV, for those of you that aren't familiar, it's kind of our 24/7 Azure Microsoft channel where you can see things live like Data Exposed on Wednesdays, but also starting March 15th, those are going to be Mondays, they're going to start streaming Learn Live sessions, and we actually have the first 6 slots. And Bob, what are we going to be doing in those 6 slots?
Anna, can you believe this? Remember we talked about at the very beginning, the Azure SQL fundamentals? We're going to go through those. Wow. We're going to do this, the interaction between Anna and you and I saw today. We're going to do this for 6 weeks in a row. Hey, listen, Anna, this is going to be a way for you to up your skills, right? You're a SQL person today and you're wondering, like, how do I get an Azure SQL? Anna, correct my wrong here. We've had people tell us, it's not something we've actually said we did on purpose, but we've had people tell us they've gone through Azure SQL fundamentals. They've been through these resources, Azure SQL workshops, and they've passed Azure certification exams just by doing that alone. And it's our intention, Anna, that we believe that Azure has evolved into the world's database. And we're committed, the two of us, the rest of the entire Azure data team, we're committed that if you're out there today and you want to learn Azure SQL because you think that's part of your skill set to up your skills, we're committed to giving you the resources for free to make sure you make that journey. So Anna, thank you so much again for partnering with me today. This was really a great journey. I love doing these sessions with you, and I really look forward to the opportunity to see all of you for OnLearn Live TV starting in March and in the future. We look forward to all the opportunities we get to present to you topics like Azure SQL, because again, we're committed to the community. That's what we do. And thank you again, everyone, for joining us today. And I hope that you enjoy the rest of the spring Microsoft Ignite event. Have a great day, everyone.